The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, coming to you cordless, everybody. It's 11:01 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8:01 p.m. on the West Coast, 1 minute after 2 p.m. in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and 1 minute after 10 p.m. Central Time here where I'm sitting in Northeast Minneapolis. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to yet another edition of Jim Peters at Night. This is episode number 81, and I want to apologize for last night. We did not do a show. I posted that fairly early yesterday. I've explained this before. We share this studio with another company, and they have dibs. So if they need to use it, we can't go. And last night it happened. And I figure it's going to happen about couple times a year. We're 6 months into this. It's happened twice. So who knows? Whatever. You know, I do what I got to do. So, you know, sorry about that. So anyway, man, too much to talk about. Not enough time. First of all, I want to mention the weather. The entire country is going to hell. It's at Minneapolis. We are having easily the warmest winter we've ever had ever in history. No lie. I think today we've had since December 1st, which is the start of meteorological winter, we've had 12 days over 50 degrees. Today was another one. We broke another record today. And 12 days over 50 degrees is a record. We have no snow anywhere. Nothing. And it's just wreaking havoc on my and a whole bunch of other people's allergies. You know, we have exposed ground. There's a lot of, because it's still not that warm, there's a lot of mold. It's just, oh my God. I mean, I'm popping Sudafed like it's going nuts. So yeah. So I like it? Well, yeah, no winter. We basically haven't had a winter. I think the entire winter, this goes back to Halloween. October, we've had only about 8 inches of snow. It's unbelievable. And it doesn't look like it's going to snow anytime soon either. Well, anyway, so that's my problem. Tonight, our guest is Albert Rosales. He's the guy who's written, the Humanoid Encounters series of books, 14 of them. He's written 14 books and another book on UFOs. He's actually written 15 books. But 14 books in the Humanoid Encounters series. He's our guest tonight. We pre-taped this afternoon. Fascinating discussion. Nobody knows what's going on. Nobody does. I mean, like, you'll hear he mentions this, and I will reiterate it. So his last book, which is so far his best-selling one, it's the one I bought. It covers the period from 2010 to 2015. It's only 5 years. There's about 250 cases in that book, if I'm right. Now, what he did is this series goes back chronologically, back to year zero, back to Jesus. It does. Started writing them. The first one he wrote, I think he said it was 1990 to 2000. And he wrote that in 2000, 2001. And then he ended up going back by decades. And then you get in the 1950s, and it's like 30 years or whatever. But he wrote them in reverse chronological order. But, of course, after he updated it, and he wrote the latest one, which is his best-selling one so far, is from 2010 to 2015, so it's very recent. And that's the one I read. Anyway, like he says, and I totally agree, 90% of these people are making this up. Just the 10% that's left, holy Christ. Some of these stories, you know, it's just the weirdest shit. So he has a database of 30,000 of these encounters that people have reported, not all to him, but I did ask him, and he'll tell you that now people are calling him directly. He started just collecting information from other people. You know, other people have said they've, you know, like MUFON and all that sort of stuff. Now people call him actually directly and tell their stories. any rate, it's a really fascinating thing. It's pretty cool what he's doing. It's a lot of work. You know, God bless him. You know, I know he's not going to rich doing this. I mean, he is selling books, but he's not going to get rich. So that's our guest tonight. We take Friday off here, if you didn't know. On Monday, we got Tim Conaway, our friend who's running for president of the United States. And my God, we got out some stuff to talk about that. Holy shit. Like, I tell you, sometimes the news is just plain depressing. Anyway, coming out on a Monday. On Tuesday, this is interesting. On Tuesday, we're doing a shout-out to World Radio Day, which was declared by the United Nations. And our friend, Michael Harrison, who's the editor and publisher and founder of Talkers Magazine, he has been tapped by the United Nations. He's the executive director of World Radio Day at the United Nations. So it's his deal, and he's coming on. Well, actually, we're taping that on Monday afternoon. He's going to be very busy on Tuesday with us. He'll be doing radio and TV interviews all day long, I'm sure. So he's coming on Monday. Matter of fact, I feel just honored that this guy is, you know, we're not Joe Rogan here yet. Yeah, right. Dream on, Jim. But, you know, so, I mean, I'm humbled that he's agreed to do this. I didn't think he would. But, yeah, he's coming on. We're going to talk about the impact of radio on the world over the last 100 years. And it has been almost exactly 100 years for commercial radio. Now, I got a little sidebar on that. Most people don't know this. The local station here in Minneapolis, KSDP AM, in 1924 ran the first commercial ever, and they're the first state radio station in the world to take on advertising as the revenue generator or as their business model. So they sold time. They were the very first, and there was no television at that time, of course. So it was their very first media outlet that ever sold advertising. So that was a guy named Stanley Hubbard. And if you know anything about Hubbard Broadcasting, they're still around. They own about a dozen radio stations across the U.S. and quite a few TV stations. Anyway, so yeah, Michael Harrison is coming on Tuesday. Wednesday, our friend Jeff Meyer from Conk News, they sponsor the show, and we'll get to that in just a second, too. He's coming on for his, we do our monthly coffee clutch. He always has something interesting to say. And, you know, people call me or text me and tell me, well, why do you have that guy on? He's so damn depressing. Yeah, no, it's all right. He's fun. He's good. And he has an interesting take on, like, everything. You may not agree with a guy, but he's fascinating to listen to. And Thursday, Nathan Wooster, our environmental and political reporter from the Epoch Times, is coming back. He was on, I think in October, he came on. He was on my podcasts and radio shows over the years quite a few times. Love the guy. Really, really cool. You know, he's also got this dual beat gig going where he does politics and environmental issues, you know. So, and you know, I'm a climate change denier, so. You know, love to talk to him about that. So that's on Thursday. And I didn't actually write this down. Who's coming out on the following Monday? You don't need to know right now. That's right, you don't. Okay, so we have a new call-in number here. Now, if you've seen this show before, and it's a little minutia that you probably did or didn't notice, we used to start at 11:02 Eastern. Now we start at 11:01. And actually, technically, we start at 11 o'clock sharp. It's just it takes about a minute for the intros and the disclaimers to run. So, okay, why are we doing that now? Why did we change it? Why did we go up a minute? Because before, we posted the five-minute countdown 3 minutes before 11 p.m. so that if people were a little early, they had something to see, they had a countdown, and if they were a couple minutes late, they still got to see the start of the show. So we started at 11:02. Now we're broadcasting. This is the reason I'm bringing this up. We're broadcasting on Blog Talk Radio. That's at blogtalkradio.com. Matter of fact, our channel is at Jim at Night, like it is everywhere else. And that's our website, too, jimatnight.com. It's at blogtalkradio.com/jimatnight. So you can listen to us live also. Now, people say, well, why would you want to do that when you can just go to Rumble and YouTube and play the audio through your car stereo? Yeah, I understand. You're right. You have a good point. One thing for us, though, one thing that's really cool is by doing this, we have a call-in telephone number. So we're actually on internet radio. So you can now call us up. You don't have to call on your camera, which proved relatively unpopular, which kind of surprised me. But I don't think people don't want to put their face on the screen. So you can now call, just dial in. The number, dial-in number is 563. It's on the bottom of the screen here. It's 563-999-3435. And Ian, you talk to the sexy British lady who will announce herself and put you in the queue. So, and then I have a little monitor off to the side here. I can see when you call. Now, tonight, we're going to run the pre-taped interview in about 20, 25 minutes. If you want to call before then, you're going to break my concentration because I got a lot to talk about. If you want to call afterwards, that's fine. And even though I went through several things, usually the C block of the show, we talk about paranormal stuff. But we have a whole interview about paranormal stuff. Not only that, I couldn't decide what to run. So I got nothing right now. So if you want to call in after the interview and talk about the interview or whatever, that's great. You know, and that, obviously now you don't even have, you can call without even listening to the show or watching because we're here at 11 o'clock Monday through Thursday, and the show's almost always at least an hour. I mean, we've only done a handful of shows out of the 81 that have been under 60 minutes. So, I mean, and usually we have a guest that's about 90. So, yeah. So anyway, yeah, give me a call if you want. That's like people call and it's cool. We love it. And those of you who are listening on Blog Talk Radio, which is also really easy to do. One really cool thing about this is they have a directory of live stuff. You go to blogtalkradio.com. We're under current events. That's what we're under. And you can, and there's a, we will be at the very top, if not the top of the list, because we start at on the hour at 11 o'clock. So, yeah, anyway, so people listen who don't know us about us from other places. And that's cool, too. And you can still text us at 408-458-5088. Yeah, Jim, that's good. I forgot to do that. I forgot to set the text thing up. Oh, yeah, great. Oh, man. It's just getting increasingly complicated running this thing. You know, I don't have an engineer. I'm doing the director. I'm doing this myself. So don't text me tonight, okay? Well, I mean, you can. I'll get the text. This is I'm not going to get into real time because I forgot to set it up. So, yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. So there's so much to talk about today, and I'm going to run this in reverse chronological order. I don't know if you know this. About 3 hours ago, the president gave a press conference from the White House about the fact that 2 hours previous to that, or around 5-6 o'clock Eastern time, the special counsel of the Department of Justice released the report on President Biden scamming all those classified documents. He's been accused of the same thing Trump was accused of. I want to make certain I get this right. The basic crux of this whole thing is Biden will not be charged. But one of the reasons he won't be charged is because after sitting for two and a half hour interviews with the DOJ and the special counsel, they determined that he's incompetent to stand trial, that he's mentally incompetent. And they did not, and I have to, and if you want to call it credit, I have to give them great credit for this. They did not actually use the word incompetent, but they did say, I think this is actual quote, he's a feeble, elderly man with a very poor memory. I think that's the way they put it. And so, yeah, they mentioned the fact that when they interviewed him, he couldn't remember the years he was vice president. He couldn't remember the year his son Beau died. So, and it's really damning. It basically, I mean, Newt Gingrich came on. I was watching this on Fox News, and Newt Gingrich came on with Laura Ingraham during that time, and he said it, and he's absolutely right about this. This has gone beyond political. The president of the United States is not capable of running the country. There's no doubt about it at this point. We literally have it in writing. It's like, and so that happened around 5-6 o'clock, around 8 o'clock. He gets on, he goes to the press conference, and basically, first of all, I'll tell you, it's not so much that it couldn't have gone worse. He seemed relatively cogent for him. It's not that's not the problem. They shouldn't have done this. I mean, he got extremely angry about the fact they put this in this thing. I've said this before, and I don't like to say this, but I have come to the conclusion that besides the fact that Joe Biden is an elderly old man, he's also an asshole. I mean, I just, you know, I did not go, you know, the liberals have this fervent hatred for Trump and have from the day he was born. You know, it's like they and I didn't come into this thinking, I thought, well, let's give this guy a shot. You know, I'm just not that passionate. I don't know if that's the right word about, I don't want to hate people. I don't. It's like, I want my president to do a good job, even if I don't support his policies. You know, it's like, you know, at least he can execute well. But Joe Biden's problem as a person, he's never wrong ever. He won't take responsibility for anything. He said that, you know, I should mention here too that the DOJ did bring up the fact that he did willfully take these documents. So basically they accused him of a crime. He did take them. But he said his staff took them. He threw his staff under the bus. He said, I didn't do this. My staff did this. I mean, you'll see playbacks of this. The press conference was about 15, 20 minutes long. He took a few questions. But what's really amazing, and also the stuff that Ingram read out of the papers being the New York Times and the Washington Post, it does seem like the press is turning on him finally, because they're starting to realize that this is all going to hell, and none of them want to get thrown under the bus with him about the fact that they've been supporting him for 3 years. So now it seems like the press is starting to turn on him en masse. The questions that were yelled out from the gallery, from the press, during the press conference, were really, really hard-hitting and got right to the point about the fact, you know, sir, you know, they're saying you don't have the mental capacity to do this. Are you thinking about stepping down? All that sort of stuff. They made no one a mention ahead of time of what he was going to talk about. So what he talked about is the fact that the DOJ cleared him of any wrongdoing, which I suppose is true. It's a better way to put it, and more, be more succinct, is no charges are going to be filed. That's a better way to put it. They did say he took the documents. They said he committed a crime, but no charges will be filed. And then he really railed on the fact they put this stuff in the report about the fact that his mind doesn't work well. He completely vociferously rejected that, and he got very, very angry, visibly angry. And that's the thing. People say, well, this is actually the way elderly people act, and it is. I mean, I know a lot of people in my, especially my age, who have had elderly parents, you know, who've had dementia. I have. My father, I mean, my mother's been on the show. She's 99 years old, and she's still sharp as a rock. It's freaking ridiculous. But my father had that in the last couple of years of his life, and I know a lot of people who have. And yes, older people have a tendency to get angry because they become frustrated with their own lack of ability. That's what happens. But that's not his problem. His problem is he doesn't think he's done anything wrong. And he keeps talking about the fact he saved the country and all this sort of, I mean, he's living in a different world. You know, the country's kind of falling apart, I would say. You know, and he does not see it this way at all. Not the least bit. So, you know, now there's Republicans who are calling on members of his cabinet to invoke the 25th Amendment, which has to be done by the vice president and the cabinet. And the 25th Amendment says if the majority of the cabinet votes to do so, they can remove the president from his office by incapacity. And then the vice president becomes actually not president, becomes acting president. I don't know what happens after that, but he or she doesn't actually become president. And the Republicans are now clamoring for this. I mean, already, it's only been a few hours. But this is not going to go down well. So also, what else happened today? Well, then you go to the morning, and Trump is presenting his case to the Supreme Court, not the Colorado Supreme Court, the Supreme Court of the United States, on why he should be on the ballot in Colorado. And let's just say this did not go well for the state of Colorado. It didn't. Virtually all the questions, I don't think there's an exception, were basically asked in a damning fashion toward the state of Colorado. And not just the conservative justices either. I mean, it appears there's a good possibility the vote will be 9-0 to put him back on the ballot. I mean, they weren't standing for this. Kagan and Sotomayor weren't standing this for a second. They don't want to get him, you know, it's like, one of them, and even Jackson, the new justice, even she said, somebody said, so we're gonna let the state of Colorado decide who can run for president of the United States, something like that. It was really damning. And needless to say, Trump gave a press conference after that. He said he's very pleased. It's almost certain, based on the comments that were made today, that they are going to vote this down. I think, like a lot of people, the real question is whether it'll be unanimous or not. So that happened today. And then, I'm listening to Ingram, who's a show I normally don't watch. You know, I spend my day collecting news. That's what I do. Mostly written. I don't like to watch a lot of TV. I think a lot of TV is really bad. And speaking of that, if you don't mind my bringing this up, Chris Hayes at MSNBC, why the fuck is this guy on television? And I'm not even talking about his political stance or opinions, which I think are nuts. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just from a presentation standpoint. I mean, he looks like a frog talking on TV. He's the epitome of the opposite of charisma. Why do these guys get on television? Why does this happen? I mean, I don't understand. It's like, this guy should not be on TV. Him and Joy Reid and a bunch of people at CNN, most of the people at CNN. I think I talked about this last Tuesday. I can't remember. It all blends together after a while. The ratings at CNN are completely going in the dumper. They keep on going down. Now, we said a year ago, we were saying, I wasn't doing the show a year ago, but I was doing radio shows. A year ago, I'm saying they can't get much lower. Well, no, they can, and they did. They just keep going down and down and down. If I'm right, okay, so now this is not cable news. I can't remember. Is this cable news or all of cable? I know that, the top three rated cable channels in this order are Fox News, ESPN, MSNBC. And kudos to them. And I'm here, I'm bitching about Joy Reid and Chris Hayes. But their ratings have gone up. Maybe not substantially, but markedly in the last year. They have managed to do a turnaround, and they've kind of pulled themselves out of the gutter. And kudos for them, just as a business. I mean, I think those people are crazy from a political standpoint. But I mean, as a broadcasting entity, I got to give them credit. They're doing okay. They're doing okay. And CNN is, if I'm right, 29th. I'm not kidding. They're 29th on that list. They are being beaten handily by the Hallmark Channel, and they got beaten by some channel, what is it called, ISPN or something like that, that is basically a channel that runs old Westerns. Even there, I'm not kidding. This sounds like a joke. I'm not joking about this. Even they're beating CNN. It's like, this is a debacle of unbelievable proportions. And finally, it seems like both the press and the brass at CNN are trying to turn this around. Apparently they've decided they cannot live off bashing Trump alone anymore. And they can't. You know, they just can't. This is a problem with the mainstream media in general. I mean, I've talked about this on previous shows, about the fact that, like, the LA Times is losing $1 million a week. Washington Post has lost $100 million in 2023, and also in 1 month, in November of last year, which is only, what, 3 or 4 months ago, they lost 25% of the subscribers in one single month. This is not going well. You probably heard about this. There's layoffs everywhere. There's thousands of journalists have been laid off, like, the last 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah, but there's two problems here. One, I've talked about a lot, but the fact that there's simply too many journalists. It's a supply and demand issue. We don't need as many people shelling out the news anymore, because the news itself, in terms of just gathering facts, if you watch the intro to the show, the very first thing is it says news is a commodity, and I very famously coined that, and it is. It's, you know, anybody can get the facts at any time, And we don't need 52 national newspapers to do it. All the news itself is the same. What's different is the analysis, like I'm doing, and also the fact that all these social justice warriors are under 35 years old. They want to do analysis, even though they've never been hired to do analysis. They've been hired to actually be reporters, but they're doing analysis. That's what they're doing. And people are getting tired of it, and mostly because these people, they don't have any experience living. That's the problem. So a lot of these, I did hear somebody say this I think this was on Ingram's show too. And this is really harsh, but I think there's some truth to this. This guy was saying the fact we have to come to terms with the fact now that the old Democratic Party no longer exists. These people are communists. And I hate to say it. I mean, I have friends who watch this who think I'm really, really in the dumpster for conservatives, but I don't think so. I think that's actually true. And there's something, and I want to preface this too. I'm going to link to this on our blog. There's a woman named Sasha Stone who lives, she's a writer who lives in Los Angeles. She's currently unemployed, apparently, but she wrote this column or this article on our Substack feed that got picked up by our friend Ed Morrissey over at hotair.com. He's the managing editor there. He was just on our show, two weeks ago? The piece is titled Confessions of a Corrupted Liberal. And she's in the same boat that I was and am in. I'm a former liberal. I mean, and anybody who knows my previous life, I mean, it's kind of weird. I've kind of lived two different lives in the same body. I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. And God bless my wife for putting up with it. If she married a really good liberal man, then that's not what I am anymore. But her piece is about the fact that she left the Democratic Party, and she had to because she said, basically, you can't ignore the fact that these people it's basically propaganda, and that the only reason they're doing this is to hold on to power. And even right now, you think about this too. So the president of the United States has been legally declared incompetent. Literally, the Department of Justice of the United States has literally declared him mentally incompetent. And he's still planning on running for reelection, you know? So at what point, I mean, and here's, you know, people say, and I got, you know, I have a lot of centrists who say, no, Jim, both parties are evil. And that's, you know, here's the truth to that. That is true, but I don't know if they're both evil at the same time. And amazingly, this Sasha Stone woman, who I'm really going to try really hard to get on our show here. I'm going to try really hard. She said the same thing I've been saying for many years. You go back 30 years ago, before 2000, and you can make a really good argument that the Republicans were evil. And not only that, I've said, you know, I'm also an election denier. To me, in my mind, there's no proof that the 2020 election was cheated, but there's a lot of substantial evidence that at least deserves looking at. And what she didn't bring up, and I brought this up before, that if you go back to the 2000 and 2004 elections, those would be the two elections of George W. Bush. There's really substantial evidence that the Republicans cheated those elections, and they did it. Now, you know, the argument for 2020 is that maybe it was like not cheated, but quote unquote rigged, and that would be, and the fact that all these emergency measures were put into place, like drop boxes, ballot harvesting, all this stuff, to make it easier for the Democrats to win. In 2000-2004, it appears that they actually did cheat by fucking with the vote count, by manipulating computers. That's what it appears to be. And I'm talking about the Republicans now. And if you look at, what's his name? Oh, goddamn, Jim. I'm not, you know, that's why I'm not president. I'm also mentally feeble too. Shit. Bush's chief of staff. What's his name? Anyway, he was woefully absent when people started talking about the 2020 possible cheating. And that's because he was the mastermind behind all this. So there's a fascinating chapter in Jesse Ventura's book, American Conspiracies, and it's about those two elections. And the thing is, you read this, and just go to Barnes & Noble and find the book and read the one chapter. That's what I would say. I read the whole book. I actually think the book's pretty fascinating. You know, a lot of people think Jesse's kind of nuts. I don't know. Look, I've seen some the craziest shit in the last 3-4 years. I can't even tell you. I mean, I used to think, well, no one would do that. No, people are doing it. You know, and yeah, you just name it. I mean, almost every conspiracy theory I've been accused of in the last 3 years turned out to be true. Almost every one. I can't think of one that wasn't. And the thing is, and here's the deal, you know, and I really try to parse my words carefully. I don't think there's any problem with the two original vaccines put out by the three companies. There might have been a problem with ineffectiveness, but I don't think there's any problem. There seems to be a lot of evidence, mounting evidence, that the booster shots, some of them were actually harmful. But I don't have enough evidence to say that. But however, I have enough evidence to say this, because the Cleveland Clinic determined this, not me. And they're one of the premier medical research organizations in the United States. They concluded that if you took those booster shots, which I did not, I did get the two original vaccines, but I did not have any of the boosters, you were more likely to get COVID than if you didn't. Got that? So at the very least, even if those booster shots are not dangerous, they're completely ineffective. They did not work. So what's that all about? How much money how many billions of dollars do we shut out for useless medicine? You know? So my point is, there's a lot of people who will say those booster shots were harmful. I won't say that, but I will definitely say I stand by the fact they didn't work. That's for sure. And like I said, that's not me talking. It's not even a, you know, stupid conservative organization talking. Excuse me. Oh. So my point is, yeah, I've seen a lot of crazy shit in the last 3-4 years that I've been doing this. I don't know what to tell you. So the president's mentally incapacitated. They're not going to remove him. He's still going to run for reelection. Like somebody said, how come somebody just won't go down to the Oval Office and say, Joe, time's up. It's time to go. Because he won't listen to anybody. That's the reason. I mean, traditionally, the president of the United States is the head, titular head of his party, you know, and that's Joe and the Democrats. So which Democrat is going to go into Joe's office and say, Mr. President, you can't run? You know, at some point they might force the issue, but I don't know how they do it. Would you literally have to pull him physically out of the office, kicking and screaming? I don't know. He won't quit. He doesn't think there's anything wrong. But he's been like this his entire life. The man's never been known for brains, ever. I mean, even going back to his earliest career. You know, I don't know. And so the Sasha Stone woman in her Substack article, what she's talking about is like, what is the point of holding on to power that much, you know? I mean, the Democrats will say if Donald Trump gets reelected, it's the end of democracy. Where in reality, if Joe Biden is reelected, it might not be the end of democracy, but we'll have a hell of a calamity. The failure of his mind would be worse than him dying. That's simple. If he died in office, Jesus, you know, I mean, that's happened a million times. Well, not a million, but you know what I mean. But if somebody has to tell him that he's lost his mind and he won't buy it, Christ. And it appears that that's where we're at already. So I don't know. So my point is, yeah, no, Donald Trump, the democracy will not end if Donald Trump is reelected. It won't. And, yeah, it's depressing. This is really freaking depressing, I have to tell you. I had one of those days today. We're going to play the interview now with Albert Rosales. He's written 14 books under the Humanoid Encounters series. And this guy's got a lot to say. So I tell you what, a little bumper music, and here we go. Off to the races. Joining us from Miami. Hold on. Florida, Albert Rosales, the author of Humanoid Encounters, that series, 14 books, right, Albert?
Right, correct. 14 yeah. Or 15.
You've lost track, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, why did you decide to start writing these?
look, I started being interested in this, the UFO stuff, phenomenon, since I was a kid. For some reason, I was attracted to it.
Uh-huh.
I started going to the library, and that's all the books I read, the UFO books by the early authors, Hynek, Bailey. And then what hit me the most was the reports of the entities or the humanoids encountered along with the UFO or next to the UFO, inside the UFO, wherever.
Yeah.
That really interests me. Since
okay, I want to stop you for a second.
Yeah.
What is your definition of a humanoid creature?
Well, my definition is an entity that's human-like. It has two arms, two legs, and a head.
Uh-huh.
Human-shaped.
Right.
It could look different than a human, but it's humanoid in shape.
Right.
Mainly, that's the basic form is humanoid.
Yeah.
It could be like what they say, a reptilian, 8 foot tall, but shaped like a human. But
right.
8 foot tall, looking like a reptilian or whatever, a gray or whatever type of entity.
So when did you decide to actually start writing? Did you write these books in chronological order? I mean, the first one, if I'm right, starts at the year 0 AD, right?
Right, before that. We're talking about BC, thousands of years. I did a chronological order up to 215. I'm already have cases from 2016, 2023, which I hope to publish them soon.
Oh, but I'm sorry, I got to ask about that too. I was kind of under the impression, based on some of the stuff you've written recently, that you were done writing about, that you were not going to continue the series anymore. Is that not true?
I'm trying to, but there have been some issues with a publisher, and I switched publishers, but I want to do it. I used to have all my database online also, which
uh-huh.
I want to do that again. Plus, it's already updated. I have almost 30,000 cases.
Holy shit, I mean, really?
Yeah.
God almighty.
I mean, I couldn't get half of the cases in my books. I mean, I could only put in whatever I could. No?
Yeah, well, I was telling you just before we started here, I read the last book, which was 2010 to 2015. I read that one. And,
yes.
You know, what can I say? I mean, it's mind-blowing. And then, you know, okay, mm-hmm. Let's say some of these people are either completely crazy or lying or stuff. Even if you dismissed half of them, the other half is just unbelievable. I mean, it's incredible.
Even out of those cases, 10 of them are correct, are real, is like, wow.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't even know how many cases were in the last book. A couple hundred?
A little bit more, because I started at 2010, I believe, up to 2015.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Maybe 300 or so.
Yeah. All right. So now I'm bouncing all over the place here because I got a lot of questions. All right. So you defined humanoid creatures. Do people send you a story? Joining us from Miami, Florida, Albert Rosales.
A little bit more, because I started at 2010, I believe, up to 2015.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Maybe 300 or so. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So now I'm bouncing all over the place here because I got a lot of questions. All right, so you defined humanoid creatures. Do people send you stories about non-humanoid creatures? Do you get any of those?
I get stories of all kinds of creatures. Yeah, certain reports are describe creatures that are not humanoid.
Yeah.
Like I have read reports in other researchers, and a couple sent to me of creatures similar to an octopus, like tentacle.
Uh-huh.
Or a slug, or different types, amorphous,
yeah.
Or something that's not really humanoid, but possibly
right.
Intelligent.
Right. There's a story that's been floating around the military for years about something that's called the Blob, which apparently is an intelligent creature that basically is like the 6 foot square and can actually eat people. Have you heard about this?
I saw the movie.
No, this is apparently a real thing.
Really?
Supposedly, I don't know. I don't know if it's true or not.
I have heard of that type of creature, shapeless, shapeshifter. But I haven't heard specifically that report from the military.
Okay.
I mean,
so
I heard a lot of weird stuff, but.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, yeah, your
yeah.
whole book is weird stuff. I mean, it's like 14 books of weird stuff. Okay,
correct.
So let's get back to how did you start writing these? And which one did you write first?
The first one I wrote was the actually the 2000. Oh, boy, I can't remember right now. It was, I think it is, I started in 2000,
uh-huh.
2000 to 2005,
uh-huh.
2005 to 2010, and then 2010 to 2015. Then I went back the 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s. The 70s and the 80s was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, it was so much stuff going on, it's unbelievable. Then 60s, 50s was kind of crazy also. Then the 40s, you know, supposedly the UFO started back in June 24, 1947 with Kenneth
right.
Arnold. But there's hundreds of cases before that. So,
and so you basically, you know, you wrote these books in reverse chronological order, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. Okay, when you get down to zero, and what was it, zero to 500 AD, is that the first one in the Uthul series? Am I right about that?
I wish I had a copy of my book here with me, but I don't have any at hand. But it's like some of them are date back to the Indian Vimanas and the Red Sea, you know, that part of history. The type of encounters that some of them were described in the Bible or certain other ancient scripts. I include a lot of those in there. So we're talking about maybe in China also, like 10,000 BC or even more.
Yeah, then and I, that was actually, yeah. That's the reason I asked, was as you get farther down the timeline, or I guess, let me see, I want to make certain I don't confuse people here. You know, in reverse chronological order, as you get farther away from the present, was the research harder?
Yeah, you know, I thankfully there were other researchers that started this before I did. And there's a lot of material that I use from them. I copy it from them. I borrow from them with, you know, of course. We always, researchers, we exchange material.
Yeah.
And I did locate a lot of other encounters here. I'm looking at my first book. Well, in my first book, I started at 41 to 54 AD,
uh-huh.
Rome. Now, the other, for some reason, the ancient cases were not included. I do have them in my private archives, which I do have. So we're talking about, I started in 41 to 54 AD, Rome, Italy. And at the end of this first book, the last case that I covered was all the way up to 1899. So I included a bunch of cases there, which obviously I couldn't include everything I had because the book would have been 600 pages or more.
Yeah, well, now you told yeah. me, I don't think you told me this while we were recording. I think you told me this ahead of time. You have a database of 30,000 cases, huh?
Almost, and I'm updating this database on a daily basis. Actually, I've been doing that now this morning.
So, especially obviously contemporary stories. Do people contact you now directly?
Yes, I do get especially researchers from other countries that have their own cases. They want to contact me to see what I think or when I exchange information. And I do cases from, I get cases from all over the world, actually. But
uh-huh.
I do get people contact me directly, and they tell me about their encounters. I mean, sometimes you realize that the person's not all there, because then you go, no.
Yeah, right.
And I once made the mistake of giving somebody my phone number in it.
Yeah.
3 o'clock in the morning, they'll be calling me in.
Right, right,
yeah.
Right. So how do you handle that? I mean, you know, okay. So I read the last book, and it's pretty obvious, you know, that you're pretty non-judgmental. You know, it's like do you filter at all? Or, I mean, if someone tells you a story that's they're obviously trying to put you on, or they're obviously nuts, you just not, just, how do you handle that?
Well, I do filter. Now,
uh-huh.
I let my readers make their own judgment, you know?
Yeah.
But I try to include as much as possible. I'm not saying that all the stories are true. Of course not, you know, but you be your own judge, you know. A lot of them, I believe a lot of them are real, are true, and or what they think really happened to them. And there's many others that I actually eliminated because they're actually stupid, like I said. I mean, they're like... Yeah.
Well, here, I'll make a judgment for you. I don't think the public can make up that much stuff. I don't, you know, I mean, you brought this up before we started recording. If 10 of those cases of the 200, 250 in the last book are real, there's still some really crazy shit going on. I mean,
Let me tell you something. Some of these people, the stories they have, if they made it up, they should be writing sci-fi
books.
That's right.
That's right. Do you know who a guy named Charles Hall is? Have you heard of him?
Okay,
yeah, no, I said this. He wrote 6 books, and I said the same thing. Either that stuff's true, or he's one of the greatest novelists who ever lived, one or the other. You know, it's like either way. It's like, you know, if you're making that crap up, man, take credit for it. It's like, it's good.
and another thing, a lot of these stories, they're like, they come from areas like in Eastern Europe, in the middle of nowhere, Southeast Asia, that would, maybe there's a peasant or somebody out there in the field that they describe something that there's no way they would have, I mean, they had no knowledge of sci-fi or anything closely resembling what they reported. And all of a sudden they report something that's been reported here in the U.S. or Canada and in the Western countries.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly the same. So you could go, where did they get that story? You know, they didn't read any books or anything like that. You know?
Yeah. Albert, have you ever seen a humanoid creature yourself?
Look, I had some encounters myself, which I'm not sure. You know, when something like that happens to you, you think you're going to be, you see something, and for some reason, you forget about it right away. Then later, you go, what the hell was that? I mean, was that real? Like, that's happened to me. Let me tell you one story
Before you go on. Yeah. I'm under the impression, even though I don't really remember anything in the last book that I read, but you include ghosts and poltergeists in this too, right?
I include some of the poltergeists that are connected to some of the UFO encounters or humanoid encounters.
Uh-huh.
Because there have been cases in which the witnesses, after encountering a UFO or a humanoid, report poltergeist activity at home. Is there a connection? Maybe there is. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all connected. But cases alone, no.
That's good to know. I wasn't really clear on that, so I'm glad I asked. Anyway, I interrupted you. Go ahead. You were talking about your own story there.
Back in 1999, I was visiting my mom when she lived by herself. This is in the area of Coral Gables, Florida. A lot of woods. Very nice, but it's close to US 1, the main. I was backing up the car from the parking area, and I looked by it back, and there was somebody standing in the middle of the street behind my car. And I looked at some, it looked like it was somebody all in white, kind of white to me. This is what I, to me, it looked like he had wings spread out in the back, like a winged, one of the winged humanoids.
Yeah.
And it turned, I just looked at it, and I didn't stop. I just sped away. And I looked back, and it was gone. That was a fleeting encounter. It was.
Did you see it literally in your rearview mirror?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I looked, and it was there. It seemed to be like turning to look at me. That's when I was in the middle of the road, so I go, I moved away, and then.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like maybe a 1 or 2 days later than I thought about it. I go, what the hell did I see? I mean, did I saw?
Yeah.
And I started thinking, you know, it sounds like something that wasn't, I mean, what people report to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you writing these books at that time?
No, not yet.
Did that prompt you to start writing, or?
I have been collecting encounters and reports. Like, I started doing that, back in the 80s or before. When I was in the Navy, I used to, when I was on my free time, I used to be subscribed to some of those UFO magazines back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Saga, no, we don't see those anymore. But anyway, I used to get them over there in my Navy boot camp. And one time I got one, and the chief called me over, and they had opened the magazine. I go, why are you reading this? This is in Great Lakes, Chicago. And I go, no, that's I thought it was a hobby. And they looked at it and they flipped it. And I guess they thought it was crazy or something. But yeah.
did you know anybody in the Navy who ever told you any weird stuff?
Yeah, there's there's a lot of people have seen a lot of stuff, but back then, especially back then, they didn't talk about it much more. If they did, it was, you know, privately, and then they, most of the time, they didn't want the story to be known. I know one guy that they were on maneuvers. He was in the Atlantic, so maybe near Norfolk. And they saw what looked like, well, they're seeing a lot now, the UAPs, the pill shape, white craft, but it was small, and it was hovering vertically over the water near the ship.
And how small? Do you have any idea?
He said it wasn't that big. It was maybe 10 meters or less.
Okay. All right.
So you can get
a person inside of it.
Somebody could have fit in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been reported smaller craft with entities inside. Anyway, he reported that to me. It was during a meeting that we had here down. We used to have a group here, independent group.
Uh-huh.
We will meet every couple of weeks and we'll talk about it. And this guy showed up and told me a story. And for 35 years, I'm retired from the Miami-Dade Police Department.
Yeah.
I was a communications operator there. And there were tons of people that would come up to me and tell me strange stories when they're out in the field or undercover investigations. There was this guy, a sergeant. They're on the East Everglades, middle of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
And they were there, I guess, they were waiting for some kind of drug plane or something to drop something, some kind of narcotics thing, okay?
Yeah.
And they looked up, and all of a sudden, according to him, the stars blotted out in a boomerang-shaped thing. And it was like when they looked, they realized it was a huge object, boomerang-shaped. And it was flying over the East Everglades. It disappeared, he said, towards the north, but it was huge. And talking about maybe 70s or late 70s. And there's other stories. Also, Bigfoot. I seen a couple of police reports, including Bigfoot encounters here in the. There's an area here in Dade County called Black Point Marina.
Uh-huh.
They used to have encounters there. There was a couple there out there on a date in their vehicle, and then they heard somebody screaming, and the guy got out, and he looked. There was another car parked close to them, and there was behind the car there was a tall, what he described was a hairy ape, bouncing on the back of the car, pushing.
Oh my God!
And the guy inside the car was screaming his head off.
Yeah, I believe it.
This couple just took off. I mean, they.
Yeah.
And the police made a report of the incident, but they never did get a hold of the guy. I guess he just left and he didn't want to talk about it. I wouldn't blame him.
I didn't mention this, Albert. I went to school at the University of Miami, so I'm pretty familiar with the area. And so a lot of people I don't think know watching this is that Florida has its own version of Bigfoot called the skunk ape. And have you had any experience with that? Or also, no, let me ask you first. Is there a difference between a skunk ape and a Bigfoot as far as you can tell?
Not really. I guess the reason they call it a skunk ape down here because of the odor, but that's also reported in other Bigfoot type cases.
Yeah, right.
Like in Pennsylvania, Oregon, California.
That's the impression I was under too, is that basically it's just a local name for the same thing.
A local name. There was a researcher here in Miami that he passed, but he told me a story that back in the 67 when there was no development near the Miami River in downtown, there was a lot of open area there. He was fishing right up the entrance to the Miami River from the ocean there, from the bay, Biscayne Bay.
Uh-huh.
And he heard a commotion in the water. He looked, and out of the water came out this huge, gigantic, he said, ape-like creature on two feet. He looked at it. He shone a spotlight at it, and it went back into the water, and he said it swam away. Not towards the sea. It went towards the in the river.
I just finished your book last night. And at the almost at the very end, you have a story about, excuse me, you have a report about, I can't remember if it was a man or a woman, who said they reported what appeared to be giant ape-like creatures wearing suits. You know, I don't know if you remember this at all, but there's a story in there about, and I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, well, those are Bigfoot in spacesuits. And I'm thinking, so do you... Do you Well, all right. Let me just cut to the chase. I'm going to cut. Hold on just a second. I got to. You have to forgive me. I got a really bad case of allergies. There's no snow on the ground here, which is really, really strange. What's your theory of what's going on?
Look,
what do you think's going on?
I wish I knew. But I think there's a connection between Bigfoot, UFOs, humanoids. They're all connected somehow. I wish I knew how, because there's been many reports of UFOs seen, and then right after that, Bigfoot seen after that in the same area.
Right.
Or together with UFOs, even inside a UFO.
Right. I've heard this too. That's why I thought that I really took notice of the story, because I thought I've never heard that about, like, Bigfoot wearing spacesuits. I've never heard that before. And I thought, well, that kind of makes sense. I've had there's a guy named Stan Gordon, you know, he's a very famous, he was on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Pennsylvania.
And he went from primarily researching UFOs to primarily researching Bigfoot now. And he said, I have a lot of Bigfoot people on the show, a lot. Matter of fact, a good friend of mine, he is an actual Bigfoot investigator for the Bigfoot Field Research Organization, and he comes on here. You know, there's, I don't have to tell you this, there's basically two camps. There's a lot of people just think Bigfoot is an undiscovered primate, you know, just like in the woods, in the forest. And then, like Stan Gordon says, he says, no, something really, really weird is going on here, you know. And which camp do you think you fit in?
I'm in the Stan Gordon camp. I've been in that camp for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Back when it wasn't popular, but people, you know, I think this is a connection. I don't think Bigfoot is a dumb animal. I think Bigfoot is a smart creature that has a lot of capabilities, telepathic capabilities. They can disappear and appear at their own, you know, stuff like that.
Do you have any theories on the disappearing thing? Gordon thinks it has to do with, like, an interdimensional type of thing. You know, I don't know. And who the hell understands that? I mean, Christ, you know.
I think that maybe they have the abilities to open up portals and go through the portals temporarily and then come out at a different location.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I could think of. They could travel through portals through other dimensional pathways, like maybe black holes.
You had another story in your recent book, too, that really I took notice of. And that is this woman who says that she's in the back seat of a car and her husband's driving, and suddenly an entity appeared on the passenger's front seat. And, you know, and you said the note you made, the comment in that story was that, well, maybe this explains, or she said that this guy telepathically told her that he was actually bouncing around the universe and accidentally ended up in the car. Right.
Now,
that's crazy shit, but it does kind of make sense, you know? I don't know.
And then we go back, and why would you make something up like that?
That's correct, right, exactly. I mean, that's right. It's just it's a weirdest thing.
Nowadays, if you're going to make something up of a UFO or whatever, alien, you're going to say, yeah, well, the Grays came up, and they abducted me, and they probed me.
Yeah.
I mean, I find that harder to believe than in some of the other stories that I have, you know.
I do, too. That's right. That's right. The standards, you know, anyone can make the standard story up.
Yeah.
You know what the rate is, right. That's right.
And I'm very wary when somebody says, yeah, I met the Grays last night. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll mention this. You're talking about your story about your friends in the police force seeing the giant thing. I have seen the giant triangular spacecraft in southern Minnesota.
Yeah.
I saw one about 10 years ago. And like you said, it was absolutely enormous. It flew right over my car. I'm literally driving through a cornfield on a dusty road, and it's night, and I could barely see anything. And the thing blocked out the stars. And it was massive. I pulled the car over and I got out. It flew right over my head. It's like, and then it just went, disappeared. I don't know what to make of it, you know.
Unbelievable. I think maybe they travel through portals also. Who knows?
Do you think any of these crafts are ours?
I think some might be ours, or maybe there's some kind of a mixture in between terrestrial technology and alien technology.
Yeah.
And there's maybe, who knows, maybe there's some kind of a government alien deal. I don't know. I'm not too much into that, but I believe there is. I think that we did recover Alien Craft in Roswell back in 1947.
Yeah,
that's my my belief.
There's a big discussion in the UFO community. You're probably aware of this. You know, there's two camps on that. Some think that the Pentagon or the military is covering up the fact that they reverse engineered these spacecraft, and then other people think that what they're covering up is the fact they haven't been able to do it. That they, you know, they have no clue how this shit works, and they don't want to tell the public. They don't know how it works. You know, have you heard this?
Yes, but maybe they have. They've been able to do it in some cases. Not only us, but I heard reports of thing in Russia.
Yeah,
and maybe in the UK, maybe Brazil, where they have some reports of that crash back in '96. But there's a whole recently some guy from a researcher that lived in Russia or he lived in Ukraine in the Crimea. Which I was in connect. we communicate all the time. He's up in Canada now. He sent me a whole list of alleged crashes of UFOs in the former Soviet Union and Russia.
Uh-huh.
A whole list and a lot of detail. Who knows?
Yeah. Is your database still online?
No, like I said, I want to get it back online. I do have the capability of putting the cases on my Facebook page. I have a Facebook page.
Uh-huh.
Humanoids and others among us. And
I tell you what, could you send me the links to that, and I will put them up on our blog so people
okay.
can see it. Yeah.
I will. I'll use your email that you contacted.
Yes, right. And also I will link to all your books on Amazon too. We'll do that.
Thank you. So. Did you get my latest summary that I sent you?
Yes, I did. Thank you. I did get them. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Some of the stuff there is wild too.
Yeah. Yeah. But so the reason I asked about the database is, aren't you concerned about, I mean, you right now it looks like it appears you have some sort of strange combination of publishing this stuff in books that people pay for and making it free simultaneously. Are you worried about anybody ripping you off, or is that, you know?
Look, strangely, before I started publishing, that's when I had problems. People take, you know, using my database and my cases and without crediting me. And then I had to talk to a couple of people about that. And after that, it hasn't been, you know, I mean, if somebody asks me for something, you know, I will give them the information. I'm not one of those people that tries to hoard all the information. I'm willing to exchange information. If somebody contacts me and says, hey, Albert, what do you know about this case here? And, whatever, in Miami, 1999. Oh yeah, I'll look over for you, and I'll send that over to them. I don't mind doing that.
Yeah, that's.
But
cool.
You know, I didn't really book the books to make money. Somebody convinced me to do it, and I go, well, yeah, you could put out the information out there more, and I did. And you know, I don't make that much, but it, you know, just
right
a little bit monthly, you know, thing.
Yeah, I'm assuming all the books in the series are just like the one I wrote. It's basically just a whole bunch of cases that you've documented, right?
Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's in the future for you? Are you going to do another one? In the series, anyway.
I'm planning, like I said, 2016, 2023, maybe a couple of 2024. Tired, actually, of collecting. Maybe I'll keep collecting cases, but I'll stop. I got to stop at a certain year. You know,
yeah.
Maybe 2023, I'll stop there.
Well, God in heaven, way. Albert, yeah. 14 books, most people say is enough. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, I'm sure at this point, maybe you're getting tired of doing this. I don't know.
It feels like it's a task that it will never end. Because
yes.
There's so much information. I got, like I said, I update my, look at this right here. Do you see this?
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of cases that I got to enter in my database.
Oh, God.
That I have.
Jeez. I mean, seriously, it sounds like a full-time job.
Yeah. Thank
yeah.
God I'm retired now. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations. I am too.
Thank you. Thank
this
you.
Is my retirement job.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You know, it's something that I like to do, you know. Most of the time I get up and I go, yeah, I want to do that. But once in a while I feel, oh, you know.
Yeah, that's
then,
true of anything.
But then sometimes it just draws me back in, you know.
Hey, Albert, what do you think is going to happen with all this stuff? Do you think there's going to be any grand disclosure in the next few years or anything like that? I mean, do you think that your work could come to any fruition where, like, somebody, like the president stands up and says, oh, by the way, they're here, they're real? Do you think that's going to happen?
I'm hoping it will. I'm not sure. You know, they're like doing it little by little. You know, it seems, I mean, there's a lot of misinformation out there too. So a lot of the good stuff is mixed in with a lot of BS, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I'm hoping we're more open to now. They got Congress talking about it and senators are coming forward and saying, yeah, we have to disclose, we'll see what the government knows. And I think, you know, a lot of those agencies like the CIA, they control a lot of that information. And a lot of the presidents that we have, most of them are not in the know. Most of them. I think the only ones that have been in the know about the UFO situation was Bush, the older Bush.
Yeah, well, he was the head of the CIA.
Yeah, that's
right.
What I mean.
Right.
And the others are like outsiders mostly, like Obama, Trump. They were not really connect. I mean, they knew little about UFOs. So I don't think they were kept in the know. I'm not sure.
Well, just really quickly, can you give us an example of obvious BS? Is there something that comes to mind that you think, you know?
Well, a lot of the stuff is when they say that the aliens are here to destroy us or to kill us or to eat us. A lot of the negative comments or information about we have to protect ourselves about an invasion, I think that's a lot of misinformation.
I've been going on about that for years. I think it's a grift to raise money. That's what I do. It's like, you know, false flag, they're going to attack us. We need $17 trillion, right, you know? That's what
false
I think.
False flag, and remember, you heard about what happened in Miami in the New Year's Day, January 1st, Bayside.
I don't know if
that?
I did, no.
Oh, it was all over the place. But anyway, there was in Bayside every 31st of December, they have like a fireworks there. A lot of people go. Unfortunately, I was out. I was sick. I couldn't go. And all of a sudden, there were reports of more than 100 police cars and people running, screaming. And there were, you know, I saw a picture of people seeing black helicopters over the air.
Uh-huh.
And then there were reports people seeing tall creatures that looked like holograms. Okay,
yeah.
Running
yeah.
around.
Uh huh.
If you Google it, will come out. So there's a lot of disinformation and there's a lot of controversy and confusion. But I never, the times that I've been there every year, I never seen something like that happen. And it's weird because a lot of the people made drawings or they saw, and they say they look like holograms. And I was talking to a guy from Naples that I know. He goes, well, you know, I don't know. It could have been some kind of psyops operation. See how we react. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
there's a theory. I don't know if you've ever heard this about the Phoenix Lights in 1996. There's a there's a theory that whole thing that people saw, which was an enormous spacecraft, apparently, that was actually a holographic projection by the government trying to test that technology. In other words, they projected that on basically into the sky. I find that interesting. I don't know. It's a pretty damn big one if it is.
it's interesting, but it according to a lot of the witnesses, it looked pretty solid, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but
and,
I think
yes, you know, and hundreds of people saw it, hundreds,
yeah,
maybe even thousands. Right, right. Hey, and it just occurred to me before we go here. So we've been talking about your books. Can you give us an example, like right off the top of your head, of a story, a story that you just remember that you just think is bonkers, that's just really incredible? All right, 30,000 stories you process. What's the first one that comes to mind if I ask you, tell me something I don't know, you know?
Well, there's so many of them, but I could tell you one that's very interesting. That occurred back in the 1973 during the fall. We
uh-huh.
had the big flap in the U.S. and several other countries, but this happened in France.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And this case always baffled me and interests me. There was a couple out in a vehicle. They in a date and they were out early, this was late in November in 73, early, almost early morning, but they saw like something on a nearby field that looked like a big dome, a lighted dome. It landed silently and they were just looking at it and some kind of door or hatch opened and out of it, three or four little, what they describe as little men with large heads, wearing silver tight-fitting coveralls.
Uh-huh.
So not exactly the Grays, but they were little men with big heads.
Yeah.
They walked around. And then right after they came out and they walked around, and these figures were described as tall, also wearing the silver coveralls, and long blonde hair, looking like human.
Uh-huh.
Like the Nordics that they speak of, you know, the humanoid Nordic. And these two stood next to the object. They didn't go anywhere. And now the biggest weird thing is another creature came out, or another figure. And this creature, they described it as a giant ape. And this ape stood on the other side of the object. They thought that he was standing there guarding, like a guard.
Was he wearing a suit too?
No.
No, he wasn't.
Just a big ape, huge.
Yeah.
And then the other two walked around also. And then they think these people, the aliens or the entities, noticed them. Then the little man went back inside first. Then the two tall ones went inside. Then the ape went, and then it closed, and then it took off. The next day, the owner of the field, they found footprints and all kinds of traces on the ground. That's one of the cases that I found amazing, because there seems to be a different type of aliens, you know, together.
Yeah. And I just want to point out that that's one of 30,000 cases you've processed. And
yeah, there's so many.
The one book I read had well more over 200. And like I said, half of the cases in the book are basically incredible. You know, it's like, almost unbelievable, but you're absolutely right. I don't think people can make that shit up that much. I just don't think they can. You know?
I mean, and to what end? Some of these people, why would a farmer in the middle of nowhere say that it makes something up like that for
yeah.
them?
Yeah.
I don't want to make money.
Yeah. Hey, Albert, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
No, you're welcome anytime. So I'm going to send you the link you asked me.
Please do. I hope you'll come back again, especially if you put another book out. And yes, you've written one book outside of that series about UFOs in Florida, correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
I want to buy that. I want to read that. It sounds pretty cool.
Interesting yeah. book. But anyway, yeah, just let me know. And if I can, I'll come back. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love that. I would love that a lot. Yeah. So thank you. We'll see you. Take care.
Take care.
That's Albert Rosales, the author of the Humanoid Encounters series. We have somebody who's been holding here for a while. Hi, who's this? Hello? That's what I thought. They bailed. Okay, so we want to thank Albert. We're going to put the links to his books on Amazon and some of the other stuff he sent us on our blog at jimandnight.com. So, I was sitting here thinking while I was listening. Oh, by the way, we had a little bit of a glitch there a couple of minutes into the interview. I'm sorry about that. My apologies. I was saying what I was talking about before in the A block about the fact that the news is kind of depressing. So I'm just thinking here, sitting, you know, pay attention to your loved ones. You know, I mean, the news is not the end-all or be-all, and it's really bullshit, basically. You know, I mean, we still live in a free country, still, hopefully. You know, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but, yeah. So, you know, what's important is your family and your friends. That's what's important. So pay attention to them, okay? And not just lip service either, if you can. So we're going to call it a night. And we're calling it a week. We don't do a Friday show here. It's Monday through Thursday. So we're coming back on Monday. On Monday night, we got Tim Conaway, our friend who's running for president of the United States. And God knows, I sent him some of the stuff that happened today. It'll be interesting to see his comments on it. I mean, got a president who's basically mentally incapacitated. So we'll find out what he thinks about that. Oh, hold on. I got one more caller here. Hold on. Hi, who's this? Don't know who that is. Okay, and Tuesday, World Radio Day by the UN. Michael Harrison, who's the founder and publisher of Talkers Magazine, that's the media bible for talk media in the United States. He's going to be joining us because he is the executive director of World Radio Day for the United Nations. So, and we're just happy as hell to have him. I didn't think he'd do it. So I want to thank him for that in advance. Well, so we're going to talk about radio. And radio is pretty much almost exactly 100 years old this year. So at least a commercial application of it. So anyway, I hope you folks have a nice weekend, okay? Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. Have a good weekend. We'll see you on Monday.